are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Monday, everybody. Happy trade deadline week. This is the Monday of the deadline. The deadline is this Thursday, the 6th. So there's going to be a lot to talk about all week long. We'll start today by addressing the latest chatter on the trade front before moving on to talk about Saturday's loss to the Clippers, including studs and duds from that game. The Wolves take on the Sacramento Kings tonight, Monday evening in Sacramento. So we'll also quickly preview that matchup, which we just saw exactly 1 week ago at Target Center, although I think we all wish, if we did see it, that we could forget that we saw it. That was the debacle of a collapse at the end of the game. But anyways, we won't talk too much about that looking backwards. We'll mostly just do a quick preview for tonight's game, Wolves-Kings. First of all, quick reminder to subscribe to this podcast, Locked On Wolves, on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T, Locked On T-Wolves. The only new rumor we've heard over the weekend pertaining to the Wolves is that Minnesota has, quote, dangled Andrew Wiggins to Golden State in a potential trade for D'Angelo Russell. That came from Anthony Slater at The Athletic. It's not really surprising. Wiggins is going to be the primary trade chip the Wolves have to offer in terms of somebody with upside that's also locked up on a deal. And, of course, the Wolves will need to match salaries with D'Angelo Russell. We've talked about how that would be difficult without a third team, unless it's Robert Covington plus several other pieces and probably a pick and something else in order to match salaries to get Russell. It's not surprising the Warriors aren't biting on a swap Russell for Wiggins either, just given what we know about Wiggins and what we know about what the Warriors are looking for and how savvy of a front office they are. All that to say, the Warriors do need some players on the wing. They need some wing depth. Obviously, Klay Thompson is out and will be back next year with a knee injury. But beyond that, I mean, obviously, Andre Iguodala is gone, and the Warriors are going to need to build up their depth on the wing if they're going to jump right back into being a contender next year. I just don't know that Wiggins and his contract are the best fit, and clearly the Warriors aren't sure about that either. There were several articles written about this rumor when it came out late Friday, and there were a couple of Warriors reporters, Warriors blogs that kind of tried to talk themselves into it a little bit, basically that Wiggins at least gives them a shot at some additional wing defense, whereas D'Angelo Russell can't provide wing defense. There was an article by Monty Poole on NBC Sports Bay Area where he basically compares D'Angelo Russell to David Lee, as David Lee was a borderline all-star in 2013, made the all-star team barely, and was a no defense, all offense guy. D'Angelo Russell did the same thing last year with the Brooklyn Nets, made the all-star team without playing much defense. And his argument is that you can't win a championship with one of those guys on the floor. It's a little bit of it's certainly a flawed argument, but there's also a little bit of truth to it too. I think that that's probably true, but not to the extent of you can't have them on your team. They just can't be your best player. And as currently constructed, D'Angelo Russell is the best player in the Warriors that's healthy. He obviously won't be once Steph Curry gets back and once Klay Thompson gets back next year. And Steph Curry's going to be back in just a matter of weeks. So I think that that's a little bit of an unfair characterization of Russell as a player and also of roster construction overall. I don't know that Russell and Curry are the best fit together to win a championship, but I'm not sure that the Warriors need to be as forced into making a move as a lot of folks think that they need to be. Just like that, I don't think the Wolves should be forced into trading Robert Covington when the guy's under contract for two more years and is a really good complementary player for a team that's trying to build a playoff contender. If the Wolves could somehow land D'Angelo Russell without trading Robert Covington, then suddenly this team becomes a lot more interesting. I mean, the Wolves have been largely competitive even during this 10-game losing streak, except for subpar point guard play. It doesn't solve the defensive issues because the Wolves have struggled to slow down all year long, even when they had Jeff Teague and they were running out both Teague and Shabazz Napier. The Wolves struggled to slow down opposing point guards, high usage guys in the backcourt for other teams. And that would still be an issue, although the Wolves could at least, you know, they've shown signs of life at times this year with the new scheme under David Vanterpool, and there are athletes on the wing between Covington, Josh Okogie, Jarrett Culver. The Wolves should have the horses to be able to guard the perimeter. But the team would become so much better offensively with D'Angelo Russell at the point that, you know, I think that that's something that can at least be figured out later. Shabazz Napier is not a long-term solution at backup point guard. I mean, he's a really good backup point guard. I'd be surprised if he's back next year. The Wolves would probably look for a guy, ironically, somebody like a Tyus Jones, who's a little bit stronger on defense and can still, you know, run a little bit of offense and run a little bit in the offense that the Wolves want to be running. But at any rate, adding Russell and not getting rid of Covington would be awesome for the Wolves. It just doesn't seem very likely that the Warriors are going to bite on a package for Andrew Wiggins. Or if they are, it's not going to be now. And for the same reason I've been saying all along, I don't think the Wolves trade Robert Covington. And if they do, it's not going to be by this deadline unless they're absolutely blown away. They have all the leverage. There's no incentive for them to move him early. The asking price is only going to go up for Robert Covington over the next year or so. One more note before we get into Wolves Clippers. There also continues to be, obviously, some Robert Covington chatter. Nothing really concrete over the weekend. Zach Lowe at ESPN talked about it on his podcast that just posted on Sunday, and just talked about the Wolves as a team that quite possibly could make a splash. And then also, basically, blog sites for, I don't know, virtually every single contending team, every single playoff team. It feels like 14 of the 16 teams that are currently in the playoff race are pining to get Robert Covington via their blogs. So the SB Nation Trailblazers blog, which is a really good blog, Blazers Edge, had an interview with Dane Moore, who's the zone coverage staff writer and reporter for the Wolves in the Twin Cities, and Dane does a really good job. But they interviewed him basically only surrounding Covington's trade value and the potential fit between Roko and the Blazers. And Moore pretty much says in the article that unless the Blazers overpay, Covington's not going to go to the Blazers unless the Blazers include basically that it would need to be Anfernee Simons plus at least a draft pick, maybe a pick from somebody else in order for the Wolves to trade Covington. And he basically spends this Q&A laying out the argument I've been making here on this podcast for the last few weeks, is that the Wolves would need to be completely blown away. They're not just seeking a couple of nice pieces. The Wolves have what you could consider a couple of nice pieces in Josh Okogie, Jarrett Culver, even a guy like Kata Bates-Diop. Like, they've got a few guys that have some upside that are probably fringy rotation players on a true contender. They don't need more of that. They need, ideally, they'd love another pick so that they can package some picks. They'd love a guy with some upside, some real upside, who could also contribute right away. Jarrett Culver appears as though he's at least a year or two away from being a true contributor. Okogie feels like he's more of a bench rotation piece. And so they would need some upside, and it's unlikely the Blazers are willing to do that. They're not going to trade CJ McCollum. They're obviously not going to trade Damian Lillard, and Yusuf Nurkic is most likely off the table as well. So basically Moore just says, hey, unless the Blazers are able to loop in a third team and or overpay for Covington, it's not going to happen. And that's the same argument we've been making here on this podcast. I've made it over at Dunking with Wolves as well, and some of the pieces I've written there. It just really feels unlikely. That said, we're going to stay on top of any Covington rumors this week. There surely will be some, as the Wolves are clearly going to be taking phone calls. They're in no position to not at least listen. There's no urgency. There doesn't need to be any urgency on the Wolves' part to actually move Covington. All right, before we get into Wolves Clippers, the matinee from Saturday, and then previewing Wolves Kings on Monday, I did want to talk a little bit about advertising here at Locked On Wolves. If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans. But you may not know that Locked On Wolves is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Minnesota Timberwolves fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. And not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Wolves fans in a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help your team achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you. The Wolves enjoyed four consecutive off days last week following Monday night's awful collapse, the 27-point comeback by the Kings in their victory over the Wolves on Monday at Target Center. The Wolves were off all week. They went to Los Angeles on Thursday ahead of their matchup against the Clippers that took place on Saturday afternoon. It was a 2:30 p.m. matinee here in the Twin Cities, so a 12:30 tip back on the West Coast. And it was as predicted, or as could have been predicted, not a super competitive game. The Wolves basically were held at arm's length the entire game. They weren't utterly blown out. They weren't at any point, it really never felt like they were going to mount a comeback. They were down 12 headed to the fourth quarter, and they gave up 98 points through three quarters to the Clippers, and then each team just scored 20 in the final quarter, and the Wolves lost by 12. But they were never truly out of the game. They were just kind of close enough to make it seem like it was possible to mount a comeback. But other than maybe like a quick flurry in the third quarter that I think they got within like seven, it never was really a serious. They were never really a serious threat to the Clippers in this one. Kawhi Leonard returned after missing a game with some back issues, and he was awesome. The Wolves simply could not slow him down. He did shoot just 9 of 21 from the floor, but Kawhi was 4 of 9 from three-point range and 9 of 10 from beyond the arc. Had 31 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, only 1 turnover. Was really, really good. Paul George was also good, and those guys didn't need to play that much. Leonard only played 24 minutes. Paul George played 25 minutes, had 21.7 rebounds, was a plus 12 on the game. Lou Williams played 29 minutes off the bench, had 17 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, plus 19. Montrezl Harrell was a 16-6 off the bench. Nobody on the Clippers team, except for Landry Shamet, who's kind of he's in the rotation, but he's not one of their top, 6 or 7 guys. He was the only guy that played more than 29 minutes in this game. Everybody else, Harrell, Williams, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Patrick Beverley, all those guys were under 29 minutes. The Wolves, on the other hand, of course, are trying to win. They have now lost 11 in a row for the second time this year. All their best players played 35 or more minutes. I guess Wiggins only played 27 minutes, but Towns played 36, Napier 35, Robert Covington 35. And unfortunately for the Wolves, nobody else really came to play other than Karl-Anthony Towns, which has been a recurring theme. The Wolves just didn't get much else from anyone else on the team. We're going to get into studs and duds here in just a moment. Overall, as a team, the Wolves predictably struggled to rebound the ball against a really good rebounding team. The Clippers pulled down 50 boards. The Wolves only had 44. They also gave up 12 offensive rebounds to the Clippers. Ivica Zubac only played 19 minutes, but he had 6 offensive rebounds, 10 rebounds total, 6 of them offensive. He committed 5 fouls and struggled to contain Towns, but obviously did a lot of damage on the offensive glass. That was a big issue in this game. The Wolves also couldn't hit the broadside of the barn from deep. They were 7 of 39. That's 17.9% from beyond the arc. Keelan Martin was 0 for 4. Jordan McLaughlin 0 for 3. Jarrett Culver 0 for 3. Towns was 2 for 9. Those are the biggest culprits in the game for the Wolves. The game early on especially was really kind of defined by tons of free throws. There's just a lot of fouls called in this game, the first quarter especially. The Clippers actually, as the game went on, did not get to the free throw line all that often. They were called for 30 fouls to the Wolves 20 for the game. And Minnesota actually shot the ball pretty well from the free throw line. They were 31 of 37. That's just under 84% from the line, which is, above what they've been doing for the season. They're like 22nd in the league in free throw percentage on the year. So they'll take that. The Clippers ended up being 16 of 18 from the line, and Leonard attempted 10 of those 18 free throws for the Clippers. In terms of studs and duds for the Wolves, Karl-Anthony Towns was the only player that was a clear stud for Minnesota. He had 32 points, 12 rebounds, 11 of 22 from the floor, 8 of 11 from the free throw line. Unfortunately, he only made 2 of his 9 three-point attempts. He had 3 assists and a block, no turnovers for Towns, and he only committed 1 foul. So a pretty good all-around game for Carl. And unfortunately, again, he got little to no other help. It's very hard for me to name another stud in this game, quite honestly. There were 4 other guys who scored in double figures, but nobody scored more than 13 points. If I had to name one, I guess I'd go with Robert Covington. He wasn't tasked very often with directly guarding Kawhi Leonard one-on-one. He ended up on him on switches a couple of times and struggled. But overall, he had a positive impact on the game defensively. He had 3 steals and 2 blocks. He committed 4 fouls in 35 minutes. Covington had 12 points, 5 rebounds. He only shot the ball 7 times, was 1 of 4 beyond the arc, which was a little bit of an issue. But if I had to pick another stud, I'd pick him. But I'm going to resist picking a third stud for this game for the Wolves. It was that bad from a consistency perspective on both ends of the floor. Andrew Wiggins. So in terms of duds, I'm going to go ahead and name Andrew Wiggins a dud. He had 13 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 turnovers. He was a team worst minus 16 on the night, struggled defensively, 4 of 11 from the floor, 1 of 3 from beyond the arc, 4 of 5 at the free throw line. That's clearly a dud for Andrew Wiggins. Josh Okogie, I'm not going to give him a dud, but he doesn't deserve a stud either. He had 13.6 rebounds off the bench, which seems like a good game at first glance, but he was 3 of 9 from the field, committed 5 fouls, had 3 turnovers, and had a couple of really poor decisions that he made in the open floor and on the offensive end of the floor. So I guess in some senses, it was a very Okogie-like game, as it was pretty up and down. I will give a dud to Keelan Martin. Keelan, the poor two-way player, had 7 points, 4 rebounds, but he had 3 turnovers in 16 minutes. Obviously not as a primary ball handler either. Committed 3 fouls in 16 minutes, 0 of 4 from beyond the arc. He did get to the free throw line. There were a couple, like there was one turnover. It was a really questionable block charge call that did not go his way in the open floor. It should have been called a block and one as he made the basket, but they called a foul. So that easily could have gone the other way. He did make all 5 of his free throws when he got there, but Keelan Martin's on this roster. He got his contract for basically one thing, and that's to shoot threes, or at least that's his primary responsibility, and he just hasn't done that at the NBA level, despite shooting the ball pretty well in Iowa in the G League. But unfortunately, not enough here at the NBA level. And then last dud in this game, I'm going to give it to Shabazz Napier. He did have 11 points and 10 assists, but 8 of his 10 assists were in the first half. He played 35 minutes and still only managed to have 2 assists in the second half, 4 turnovers on the night, was a minus 9 in the plus minus column, only shot 4 of 11 from the field, 1 of 4 from beyond the arc. And fair or unfair, the Wolves just need him to be their third best player fourth best player after Towns, Wiggins, and Covington. And Napier just hasn't brought it consistently of late. To be fair to him, his role isn't supposed to be as primary, starting point guard. He's supposed to be a backup point guard, 20 minutes a game or so. So he's definitely being overextended here. But he showed some flashes, especially early when Towns was injured back in mid to late December, where Napier was just awesome. I mean, he had a couple of those 20-plus point games. I don't know if the burden of being the starting point guard is finally starting to weigh on him, but the consistency is certainly starting to wane a little bit for Napier, unfortunately. All right, lastly on the podcast today, we're going to talk a little bit about Wolves-Kings Monday night. We'll talk about any other general NBA news as we peek ahead to the week and look at the Wolves' schedule in the coming days. The Timberwolves are in Sacramento on Monday evening to take on the Kings for the second time in a week. This game will tip off at 9 p.m. local time, of course, 7 p.m. on the West Coast. The Wolves and Kings just played last Monday. That was the game that the Wolves led by 27, led by, I don't even know, 17 points by under 3 minutes. They led by 14 with under 2 minutes to play, led by 9 with 37 seconds, and led by 3 with 2 seconds, and ultimately lost the game in overtime. We don't need to rehash that all too much, but that was the worst, I think we could say arguably the worst loss ever for any team in terms of the stats that ESPN was able to pull related to that game. But since then, the Kings have gone 1-2. They lost to the Thunder shortly thereafter. Then they beat the Clippers by 21 at LA and then lost to the Lakers at home the other night. So the Kings went 1-2 over the last week. The Wolves have just played the one time against the Clippers on Saturday. Looking back at that game, and again, not too much, but looking back at that game a week ago, the Wolves had their way for more than 3.5 quarters in this game. Basically, the first 43 minutes of the game, the Wolves had their way. Towns ended up only with 23 points, 8 rebounds, but was effective. Covington was really good, 24 points, 7 rebounds, ultimately fouled out of the game, but was good before that. Wiggins had his best game in a long time, 36 points on 13-21 shooting. He made his first 6 three-point attempts, was 7-11 from deep on the night, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, and was just really, really good. Minnesota didn't get much from their bench, which ended up really being a big deal towards the end of the game when everybody was tired. And then once the game got to overtime, the Wolves couldn't really afford to go to their bench. And then there was also the final minute and a half where the Wolves bench gave back that lead in unbelievable fashion. And that was the combination of Keelan Martin and Naz Reid and Jordan McLaughlin and some of those guys that kind of combined to do that. Josh Okogie had a tough game as well. He was 1 of 7 shooting, was a minus 17 off the bench. Kata Bates-Diop had 9 and 5, but was a minus 27 and was part of that giving the lead back as well. But the Wolves were able to get where they wanted to on the floor. They shot 23 of 46 beyond the arc against the Kings, 50% on three-point attempts. One of the things that killed the Wolves, for as good as they were beyond the arc and as out of character as that was, they were equally as bad shooting free throws. They were 20 of 33. That's under 61% from the line. And overall, I mean, if they shoot a normal, you know, they're not a great free throw shooting team. I mentioned earlier, they're 22nd in the league in free throw shooting percentage. You know, they shot the ball super well from the line against the Clippers on Saturday. If they could have been somewhere in between in this game, they obviously would easily have won. But the Wolves clearly match up pretty well with the Kings. The Kings aren't that good. I mean, they're an 18-win team right now. The Wolves are a 15-win team. The Wolves beat the Kings in overtime, double overtime in Sacramento. They lost them in overtime at home. This is clearly a very winnable game for Minnesota. And this would also be the second time that the Wolves would break an 11-game losing streak at Sacramento this season, which is crazy for a number of reasons. Never should that be a sentence that we have to speak, but they have a shot at doing that in this game. The Kings are a little bit banged up as well. Marvin Bagley's still out. Rashawn Holmes is still out. The Wolves will likely be without Allen Crabbe, but other than Crabbe and Jake Lehman, the Wolves are healthy. Buddy Hield is the guy to look out for, obviously. He had 42 points off the bench and got hot at the end of regulation. He's the reason from the Kings side why Sacramento was able to come back in that game. He shot 9 of 14 from beyond the arc and was just piping hot in the final minutes of regulation. The Wolves didn't really, I mean, Nemanja Bjelica, I guess, was the other big issue. He shot 7 of 10 from the floor, 4 of 6 beyond the arc, had 20 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, 3 blocks, 2 steals, and was really good in his return to target center. De'Aaron Fox was also good. We talked about him before the game last time, being a high usage guard with quickness that can get where he wants on the floor, exactly the type of guy the Wolves struggled with. And he did have 22, 8, and 7, 8 assists, 7 rebounds, shot 7 of 17. Not really a three-point threat, but was good otherwise. And the Kings still shot the ball as a team well from 3, 18 of 40. That's 45%. So De'Aaron Fox is another guy to still look out for in this game. All right, peeking ahead at the week for the Wolves here on Monday morning, trade deadline is on Thursday afternoon, and then All-Star break is the following week. The Wolves are at Sacramento on Monday. They go home for a two-game homestand versus Atlanta Wednesday, the night before the trade deadline, and then home for the Clippers on Saturday, and then they don't play again until Monday night in Toronto. So we're at now a total of 5 games, including Mondays before the All-Star break, 2 games before the trade deadline. So a lot's going to happen here news wise in the next week and a half, 2 weeks. So here's hoping the Wolves can break that second 11 game losing streak of the season tonight against Sacramento. And we'll have a lot more to talk about on the happy side of things here the rest of this week for the Wolves as we get closer to the trade deadline. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T, Locked On T-Wolves. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.